Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Beckett Haight, and you're listening to the Think Inclusive Podcast.
Recording from beautiful Marietta, Georgia, you are listening to the Think Inclusive Podcast, episode 25. I am your host, Tim Villegas. Today we have Beckett Haight on the podcast, but before we get into his interview, I have a few announcements. Number one, we want to make sure that we get your input about topics and guests for the podcast. So get on the Twitter and tweet us at think_inclusive. And let us know who you'd like for us to interview and what topics you'd like for us to cover. Also, you can get onto the Think Inclusive Facebook page and give us a comment, check out the links, check out the resources, or you can also get onto thinkinclusive.us, onto our Contact Us page. Let us know who you would like to hear us interview. We have some great guests that are being booked as we record this podcast right now. They're top secret though, so I cannot tell you who they are, but you are going to be very excited. And also, the last announcement is really just a teaser because we will be offering inclusion coaching or educational consulting for whoever would like our services. We have not put that onto the website yet, so this is really a podcast exclusive that we are going to be sharing very soon. If you want more information about that and you are really interested, you can always email me at timvillegas@thinkinclusive.us to get more info if you want to contact us. Today on the podcast, we have Beckett Haight. We talk about his experience with differentiation and inclusion as a special education teacher working on 3 different continents. We talk about his recent TEDx talk, Teaching Every Student Computer Science or How to Code is Not the Answer. And after the podcast, please visit patreon.com/thinkinclusivepodcast, where you can support our goal to bring you in-depth interviews with inclusive education and community advocacy thought leaders. Also, if you like the podcast, please help other people find us by giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the Think Inclusive podcast. You can also tell your closest friends because we love word of mouth promotion. So, without further ado, here is the interview. Hello, everyone. I'd like to thank Beckett Haight for being on the Think Inclusive podcast. I'm very excited about having a conversation with him. He is a national board certified special educator who's been involved in special education as a nonstop as a student, a volunteer, an aide, or a teacher since 1994 when he got his first IEP. He spent 6 years teaching in high need schools in California and has spent the last 7 years as a learning support teacher on 3 different continents and the Caribbean. He recently gave a TEDx talk titled "Teaching Every Student Comp Sci or How to Code is Not the Answer." Welcome to the podcast, Beckett.
Hey, thanks.
So really excited to finally have a conversation with you. I've been in touch online for, I don't know, it seems like a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. And you've written some guest posts for us. And I also want to highlight just before, you know, we'll get into this, but you recently wrote a guest post that's on the website right now. So as everyone's listening to this, make sure you visit the website and read Beckett's post. It's fantastic. So Beckett, what is new in your world right now?
Well, currently I'm in Mexico. I've been teaching here for the last year, and I'm teaching at an American school. And the last few years I've been teaching all over the world, and every 2 years you have the opportunity to look at a new job, or, you know, your contract would be up. So I'm starting to think about where I'm off to next, or if I'm going to stay in Mexico. And I really like it out here in Monterrey, but the world's a big place, so I'm putting together my cover letters and busting off my resume and starting to think about jobs in, like, South Africa and Thailand and Brazil. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
That's fantastic. So where have you taught before? It says in your bio that you've taught in 3 different continents, so what's some examples?
Yeah, I was in Ethiopia before Mexico, so I was in Addis Ababa for 2 years. And before that, I was in Kuwait. And before that, I was in the Dominican Republic. And that was my first posting. I was trying to learn Spanish, so I took the job in the DR so I could try to get fluent. Mm-hmm. And I kind of did get fluent, but then I lost it because I started learning Arabic in Kuwait. And I started learning Amarilla in Ethiopia. And now I'm getting my Spanish back, so I'm in a good place.
Yeah, actually, that was going to be my question, is if you were already fluent in Spanish before you taught in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. You know, now it's kind of clunky, and I have a lot of Dominicanismos, a lot of Dominican things that Mexican folks don't understand, so I have to rewire my Spanish a little bit.
So you said you're teaching at an American school. Is that through is that through a particular organization, or is it private, or how does that work?
That's a good question. It's a private school, so most of the schools I've worked at are nonprofit, like private schools, basically. And some schools in the international field can be like Department of State schools, or they can be linked to an embassy, or some of them are just for-profit. But most of the schools, I'd say the majority, are just like a school that they built, and it's like a private school in the States. So they pick a curriculum. It might be IB, it might be AP, Common Core. They have a board of directors, headmaster, like a superintendent. But it's kind of like working at a high school in the States.
Okay. And have you taught in the States at all?
Yeah, so I started my career in California. So I taught for 6 years out there. I was in Los Angeles Unified for 4 years, and then I was up in the Bay Area for 2.
Okay.
And I'm thinking about getting back out there at some point. You know, I like working in high-need schools, and working at these private schools internationally are kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to get back to my roots of because that's kind of why I got into special education, is I wanted to help the students that needed the most help. And then I thought working with special needs students in high need schools would be like the best place. So I'm trying to, I'm thinking about getting back to that also.
So why did you become an educator in the first place?
Well, as you mentioned in the intro, I had an IEP, so I got diagnosed in sixth grade. I got kicked out of sixth grade, and so they're trying to send me to an alternative school. And so at that point, they've been trying to diagnose me for a few years since elementary, but I never got a diagnosis. And I never had an IEP, but then once they tried to send me to an alternative school, my mom fought to get a diagnosis and get me some support for my mainly ADHD, like behavior challenges. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I went to a non-public school. Are you familiar with non-public schools, like NPS?
There are a few in Georgia where I'm, you know, from right now. I'm actually originally from the LA area. I'm not sure if we've talked about that yet, but so there are some non-public schools in Georgia. Yes.
Okay. So yeah, I went to there and I was there for 2 years and I got to high school, and after some problems I got through high school and I turned my life around. I was having a lot of issues. And just with impulsive behaviors, criminal activity. And so I just wanted to give back at some point, you know, turn my life around. I said, hey, who can I help the most? Should I work with youth, incarcerated youth? Should I work with kids with special needs? And then I became a TA by chance. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Let me study education. And next thing you know, I graduated and I've been teaching ever since.
That's fantastic. It sounds like you've had a lot of experience in different environments. So that's I'm sure that brings a lot to your students.
Oh yeah, it definitely helps.
Let's talk a little bit about your TEDx talk, teaching every student computer science or how to code is not the answer. I guess where did this idea of you preparing this talk come from?
Well, I started a master's in ed tech, education technology, back in 2011, and that was a whole experience. I was a Luddite before. I had the brick Nokia phone. I didn't have any extra apps on my computer. I just used the school computer and I used the internet and Microsoft Word and all that, and I was very simple. But then I started the ed tech program, and I started learning how to code, and I started learning about hardware and all these different apps. And the more I learned about, like, basically, I started building an app on, it's called Xcode. It's for iTunes or the iOS, and I built a couple websites with HTML. And the more I did that, the more I realized that there's tools out there that would do it for you. And you didn't have to spend all that time learning. You know, I spent a whole summer learning how to do the iOS, the iPhone app. So I took all these tutorials and I built all these little mock apps. But then I started hearing that there's apps that will build the app for you. So you just have to design it and you have to have the content. And for me, that was the harder part, figuring out what needs to go in the app. Because I was actually trying to build, you'd be interested, I was trying to build an app for students transitioning into college. Mm-hmm. So all the transition services I did on paper and just, with talks with kids, I was trying to build that into an app so they could have, like, GPA calculators and set goals and research colleges all in one app. And all of that was taking so much time developing that learning how to code didn't seem like the right idea. So I started, the beginning of it, and over the years I just see politicians are like, every student should learn how to code and everybody needs to be proficient in a coding language and this and that. But for me, I felt like you didn't need to do that because you could use Google Sites or Squarespace or AppShed to build an app. And we have so many struggling students, us as special educators, we see it every day. Mm-hmm. And to add one more requirement, say, okay, you have a language requirement, you have a math requirement, you have English, but now you need to be, proficient in HTML, I think that's misguided a little bit. So that's kind of where I've been. And I try to, I've been thinking about this idea for a couple of years, doing it as a TEDx talk, because it just seemed like the perfect place to just get out there and say, this is what I think. A lot of people might not agree. Let's talk.
Yeah. Your talk reminded me of I was walking in a school. I don't remember exactly when. It could have been at the beginning of this year, and there was a poster hanging up, and it was a picture of Mark Zuckerberg, and the mm-hmm. quote next to him is that computer science or coding, I can't remember, you know, how it was phrased, should be another subject like math or ELA. Mm-hmm. And it was like the perfect the perfect parallel to what you're talking about, because
exactly.
there's a lot of people talking about that, and that it really should be just another thing that everyone learns. Mm-hmm. But something that you talk about in the TEDx talk is that we're missing foundational skills. Especially in the critical thinking, and yeah, I really exactly. liked how you said this. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your experience in working with students and seeing that's a piece that's missing, and maybe a strategy or a way that you develop that or teach critical thinking skills to students with disabilities.
Sure. I guess just to answer the question quickly at first, a lot of times students come to me and they have the learned helplessness.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as they have to start, you know, getting critical with the thinking, they're like, oh, I don't get it. I need help, you know. And I see that time and time again. All the countries I've been at, it happens like that. And so a big key for me is scaffolding the process towards critical thinking without making the kids freak out and, like, shut down. You know, like, because a lot of times teachers, it's more expedient just to be like, oh, okay, it's right here, or this is how you would do it, or this is the inquiry you need to do. But you need to, like, work with them in their VPD and kind of guide them through, okay, so what would you do in this situation? What options might you have? And kind of help them, you know, guide them. So that's kind of one of the key things I do as a teacher. It's part of my hidden curriculum, I would say, you know, just making sure that I don't just give the kids answers and I don't spell things out. I help guide them. But yeah, I see it a lot. I'm in a push in math class right now. And we were just talking, me and the teacher were talking the other day about how the students aren't thinking critically about just basic math things. You know, like different shapes. They might think they made a square, but it's a rectangle. And you think that they'd be able to kind of think it through and be like, okay, this doesn't look exactly like a square, but I don't know what that is. I don't know, is that critical thinking or is that mathematical reasoning ability? So our goal then is to try to figure out how to get the students to not just put something on the paper and move on, you know, trying to take more ownership into what they're doing. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah. You use the phrase learned helplessness, which I think is very interesting. And I wonder if you have any opinions about why we see that so much, because I definitely, you know, as a consultant to teachers and working directly with students with disabilities, I definitely see that. So mm-hmm. I wonder if that, do you think that's a symptom of something or, I don't know.
Yeah. I guess my feeling is always that it's just easier for, you know, the teachers to kind of just give the students the answer in a sense. Mm-hmm. Like if they have a question, I don't get it, instead of kind of working them through a thought process or, you know, kind of guiding, you know, like doing kind of like a think aloud, like, oh, okay, so what else might you want to search in, you know, putting your search terms in Google? What if you added, I was about to say it in Spanish, comillas, what do you call those, quotation marks, you know, what if you added that to part of your search and then did a minus this, and, you know, and the students don't want that. They just say, what should I search in Google when they're doing research? And then the first thing that pops up, if they don't see what they're looking for, they kind of give up sometimes, for example. So, and it's easier for the teacher to grab the keyboard and be like, here, search this. Oh, there you go. There's your result. Okay, read that website. But to step back and kind of guide students through thinking, or build that into your rubrics and to your, you know, if you have like a project-based learning situation, kind of have it built into every stage. And it takes more effort, and the kids don't like it. It's, you know, everybody's happier when they get a quick answer, but, you know, it's kind of like working out. You don't get the muscles if you don't feel that pain, right?
Yeah, no, I like that analogy. I like that analogy a lot. As someone who works with teachers a lot, I'm always interested at other people's perspectives on how, how to promote that sort of planning for teachers, because, you know, I mean, you know, you, I mean, you taught in LAUSD. there's not enough time. There's a lot of paperwork. You're overworked, overtired. How do you get to the point where you go through that whole process of knowing how to plan for the success of all your students? That some teachers, I'm not sure if it's if they're just naturally gifted in that particular area, or you know, maybe it was modeled. I think for mm-hmm. me, I had really good models. So, and that's really the best way that I learn is I observe, and then I was mm-hmm. able to copy that and then build systems in to myself. So I really don't know what the answer is. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I have an idea. Yeah, when you mentioned that, it reminds me, I definitely had some good models too, like, because I've co-taught with a ton of teachers over the years and pushed into a lot of classes, so that's one area where I've seen a lot of different styles of teaching. But I think also, like, the UBD framework, you know, understanding by design, and, like, backwards planning, and developing your units. Like, I don't know if teachers in the United States are using Atlas Rubicon. Have you heard of that?
That doesn't sound familiar, no.
Well, internationally, a lot of schools are using this system, probably because there's a lot of teachers moving so often, they just need, like, a place to put the curriculum. So it's basically unit plan mapping. You put in your UBD unit into this, you know, it's kind of like a website. What is a website? But it's like your personal website. And they start from your standards, what skills do the kids need to know, what content are you teaching, and which is kind of where you break down the difference between knowing something and understanding. Mm. That's kind of where we're talking about critical thinking. You know, you can say, okay, I'm going to do these learning activities so the kid can know this concept, but to truly understand it, they need to be able to transfer the skills and apply it in a different context. So that's kind of where you start thinking about it as your unit planning, and then you come up with the learning activities and your assessments. How are you going to assess this? How are you going to differentiate? That's kind of where I come into things as a learning support teacher. I work with the teachers on how to differentiate all the different objectives, focus on the key understandings and all that. But, I guess that's what I would say. UBD might be the best way, just sitting down and unit planning. Because after a lot of teachers, like you're saying, are busy, and it's hard to really sit down and plan out the scope and sequence and put it all together. But once you do that, you start to get more ideas, and then the next year you can go back on that unit and make more modifications, and you know, make sure you're hitting all the learners and help them move and scaffold everything.
Yeah. I love that. So UBD is units by design. Is that what you said?
No. I think it's understanding by design.
Oh, understanding. Okay, understanding.
Yeah.
Understanding by design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just basically like backwards planning, like what are the standards, what are the assessments, what do we want kids to do, you know, the enduring understanding, the central questions.
Yeah.
And then from there, you plan everything. And so that's what you if you want the kids to come up with a skill of being able to critically analyze a media source, you got to plan that out, you got to differentiate, you got to have resources to support that, and it's all just like doing the unit plan.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And then you also said something about Atlas Rubicon. Is that something that people can look up?
I've only used it through the schools I worked at.
Okay.
So I think you have to have like a school account. But either way, like you can find those kind of unit templates online.
Okay.
It just really helps guide you through, the process of developing a strong unit and scaffolding and supporting right. all the learners and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it would. I guess when I'm reflecting on my when I would lesson plan and the backwards planning is familiar to me. Kind of looking at where mm-hmm. I want the what I want the students to know, and then and work from there. Like it's like that idea of keeping the end in mind. You know, with the mm-hmm. All those the leadership. That Stephen Covey thing. But anyways, that's really good information. I like that. You mentioned something about differentiation, and I wanted to talk about that, 'cause you mentioned something in your guest post. Mm-hmm. And like I said, everyone that's listening should definitely check out the post that Becca did on Think Inclusive. But, when you're supporting students in the inclusive class and modifying as little as possible, and not just mm-hmm. passing struggling students to the next grade, we will be doing a service to our students. And I want to pick your brain about this idea of modifying, maybe accommodating, and differentiation. Is that there's mm-hmm. There's a lot of different words that float around in education, and I don't think people, teachers especially, have a really good grasp of what differentiation is and how it is or is not modifying work. Mm-hmm. I know that's a really big question, so I don't expect you to, we could like have a whole podcast series about that, right?
I know, right?
but just the best you can, maybe summarize, because you talked about mm-hmm. in the post, you talk about differentiation, content, process, and product, right? So, what is, I guess, content, process, and product? Let's start there.
Okay. So, what you're saying is very true. There's a lot of confusion, and sometimes the terminology gets things confusing. Because you said modify, like me just a minute ago about Atlas, I said I would modify my unit plan the next year. And as I said that, I was like, I shouldn't have said modify, because people might start thinking I'm talking about the standards and the expectations. And, when I'm working with teachers, we'll say, okay, we're going to modify the test. But we don't mean modify. We mean we're just going to adjust it and we're going to differentiate the test, not modify. Because, the modification means that the standard is being lowered, right? So, and to your question, so the content, the process, and the product, that's what I'm always thinking about differentiating as I'm working with pushing teachers and supporting the students on a caseload. So basically, the content, the level might change depending on the student's readiness. So that's kind of the underlying part. You have to look at student readiness, the interest, and then just kind of like the learning profile. So if a student, for example, maybe let's say in English, you're trying to teach ironing through a certain text, but that text reading level is too high for the students in this eighth grade class, then maybe as a special educator, I'll come in and I'll lower the reading level, but we'll still focus on the irony part of the thing, right? Or the process, you might have every kid in the class is expected to read, a certain passage, but we might find a different process for finding irony or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that teachers feel sometimes like their hands are tied when, and you gave a great example. You have a grade level, an on grade level assignment, and you have students who are reading maybe two or three grades below, mm-hmm. With understanding the content of that assignment. And to to lower the instructional reading level of that passage and giving it to that student isn't modifying the curriculum, but it's giving access for that student to understand whatever it is, whatever the end goal of that assignment is. It's giving access to that student so that they can achieve what you want them to achieve. And like your example, if we're talking about irony, then the end goal is that student understands about irony. The end goal is not for that student to read on grade level for that particular assignment.
Exactly. So
I think that's a huge piece that's very confusing because, and then also, when you're thinking about differentiation, that teachers feel like I have to come up with, if I have 30 students in my class, I have to come up with 30 different plans. You know, it's really more about keeping those three things on top of mind: content, process, and product, and making sure that for certain students, I know that I may need to have this student produce a different product in order to get the desired result that I want, like from that standard.
Exactly.
So, yes. So yeah, that's perfect. I think you summarized it very well. And it's something that that one of my goals for Think Inclusive and our podcast is to, like, that is one of our central messages that to empower teachers, and parents to advocate for when they're, you know, when they're in IEP meetings, to be like, you know what, like, I understand my kid reads at a second grade level and he's in fifth grade, but, you know, let's support him in his reading so that he can understand science and social studies or whatever. Because what ends up happening is the school says, well, he needs to go to small group for that because he's not achieving at grade level. So, that's what I want to avoid.
Wow, that's true. And then, some of the times it's easier to do that, like historically, to say, he's at a second grade level, let's put him in a small day class or pull out. But there is a lot of ways that, things can be differentiated. I worked with kids in high school in a push-in biology class. Some of the kids I worked with had a first grade reading level, first grade writing level. Some of them cognitively were in the upper elementary range, just in general. And, we had to find ways to make it happen. Sometimes instead of reading part of the textbook, we'd have a kinesthetic activity where we model something. Other times you're putting stuff together, building models and stuff, instead of just like watching a lecture. I mean, it takes work and it takes support from learning support a lot of time, but it's definitely doable.
Yes. You have to be committed to it. You have to decide as a team that this is what we're doing.
So
that's great. So this has been I love our conversation. I wish that I guess my hope is that these are the kinds of conversations that teachers are having all around the world, right? And how to support students, and hopefully making decisions that are saying, you know what, we have students with a wide variety of needs. But let's figure this out. Let's make sure that we build classrooms that are inclusive so that students aren't learning in separate environments. I really appreciate your thoughts on that.
I'm not part of the movement, so,
Yeah.
I love talking about it and thinking about it. I love seeing it move forward.
Fantastic. On that note, where can people find your thoughts about this?
I have a blog where I talk about special education themes, and it's called Collections of a Special Educator, and it's at www.beckethate.com. So just my name.com. I had to buy that domain a couple years ago. I didn't want anybody else taking it and putting up weird stuff. So.
good.
Yeah, and then I'm on Twitter a lot, at Beckett Haight, BECKETTHAIGHT. So I'm always hitting the Twitter chats and trying to find interesting content.
All right. All right. So everyone, please, as you're listening to this, check out Beckett on Twitter and on his blog, and then also read his guest post on Think Inclusive. It was a fantastic and fascinating conversation with Beckett Haight. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Great talk.
That is our show. We would like to thank Beckett Haight for being a guest on the Think Inclusive podcast. Make sure to follow him on Twitter and his blog, BeckettHaight.com. Follow Think Inclusive on the web at thinkinclusive.us, as well as on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and Instagram. You can also subscribe to the Think Inclusive podcast via Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or anchor.fm, the easiest way to start a podcast. If you are using the Anchor app to listen, please leave us a voice message. You may be featured on our next podcast. You can also favorite us and or use the applause button while listening to the show. We love to know that you are listening. From Marietta, Georgia, please join us again on the Think Inclusive podcast. Thanks for your time and attention.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.